freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Well, we're going to excuse you from the interview.
Doesn't really work that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen in Ballard.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
It is, oh, there we go. Hello. It is the Brock and Salk Show on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, and the Seattle Sports app. Let's not leave it out today. It's very important on a Wednesday that we make sure we talk about the Seattle Sports app, where you can get everything you need right on your phone, plug it right into the car, use Apple CarPlay, whatever it is you use. What does Android have for that? What's that called? I don't know. Nobody knows. It's some green text garbage that nobody understands. I hope you guys are having a good morning. We will talk to Kevin Burkhart today, who is calling the Super Bowl this year. Kind of looking forward to that. I think he's excellent, does a really good job, and looking forward to talking to him. We've done that a couple times. So we'll do that at 8:30. I wanted to start off the show today, though, quickly, just to spend a moment or two on this. Before we get into some local stuff here with the Seahawks and the Mariners, and a lot of Mariner talk in the station yesterday, Shannon and Divish and Aaron Goldsmith was on the station. So everybody kind of talking some Mariners yesterday, and Scott Service was on last night with Shannon and the Hot Stove Show. So yeah, got a lot of stuff I want to get to there. I thought I would start off the show this morning by telling everybody that it is now set in stone. That it is now guaranteed.
It is.
Yes. You may not realize it, but Russell Wilson is going to have an enormous comeback season in 2024.
Oh, no.
It's fine. I mean, by the way, it's okay. We're okay with Russ having a big season. That's okay.
But it's set in stone.
No longer have their pick, so Denver can go on to do whatever they want. Hopefully, it'll still be entertaining for us, and we'll get a little material out of it. But they're going to be good next year, or at least Russ is. And I know this because Colin Cowherd has finally now gone against Russ.
Oh. I have been told the Broncos have made a decision. They want Sean Payton. Russell Wilson has told the Broncos owners he wants Sean Payton. Here's the dilemma. According to an NFL exec, Denver's got the best tradition. The new owners seem aggressive. They're willing to spend. But I think Russell Wilson's washed, and the lack of draft capital holding him back. The defense is very good, but Mahomes and Herbert aren't going anywhere in that division.
Oops.
Washed.
I mean, if I'm Colin, and I love Colin, as you know, big fan.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that basically what he said about Pete last year? Old coach, right? Old man, gonna retire, washed out.
70.
Right, 70 years old, older coach. Right? I mean, careful, man. Don't start calling him wash.
Oh, he doesn't have to be careful. He doesn't care if he's wrong.
That's also true.
Wasn't it a little bit an eye-opener when he left the Seahawks and former teammates, some of them offensive, used words like fake, isolated, not approachable? There are so many things to like about this, and they'll probably pay upwards of $25 million for Sean Payton, but I think I'd pass.
What happened? I mean, that is 180-degree turn.
He was the biggest Russ supporter ever.
Ever.
Like, he was willing to throw everyone in the Seahawks organization under the bus to say that they were all the problem and Russ was not.
He decided to choose Russ when Russ shouldn't have been the choice anymore. And now that it has hit absolute rock bottom, although Russ had a couple of good games at the end of the year, won that game, right, against the Chargers. Like, now he's decided he wants to say Russ is washed. Colin, I love you. I think you're the best. I think you're a tremendous talent. You are the pinnacle of this profession. I'd be real careful saying Russ is washed right now. Because I think he's right, by the way. If I'm Sean Payton, I'm passing on Russell Wilson, not because I think he's washed, but because I think he's a bad fit for the offense that I've run forever. But I'm not convinced Russell Wilson is washed. I'm really not.
Yeah, but if this ends badly, he'll just be like, you remember me, huge Russ supporter. I've always been a Russ guy. That's how it'll go.
I suppose it is.
Planting seeds for his exit eventually.
All the great ones, all of them, have like an approachable feel, kind of relatable. One of the guys, go out drinking on a Tuesday night. You can put your arms around him. That's like the opposite of what you're hearing from former Seahawks.
Is he just hearing this now?
I was gonna say, we were hearing this last year, too.
We've literally known this for like 8 years. I mean, when did the Greg Bishop column come out where he, you know, followed Russ and we were all like, okay, he's A-Rod?
Yeah, but most people had their heads in the sand then. A lot of people thought that was fake.
Like, we knew it was fake and that he wasn't like he was. We knew there was that element to him, but we overlooked it because of all the other great things he did. And we said, well, all right, he's kind of a weird dude. There's an A-Rod thing. Eventually that might be a problem. But right now, everyone is able to get over it. Colin's like just discovering that people thought this about Russ.
And some current Broncos, although a couple of players late in the year did defend Russell Wilson. You got to be a unifier. One of us, relatable, approachable, can't have your own doctor and chiropractor and therapist. And I look at NFL quarterbacks who have often had their careers implode. It's not the football stuff.
So which is it with Russ? I mean, I guess he's sort of saying both. He's washed as a football player and the relatability stuff is going to get out. I mean, he might be right about the relatability stuff, but I think if Russ can get back to playing his kind of game, all that stuff's going to go away. Honestly, I've had as much fun as anybody has with Russ this year, and I followed this story as closely, if not more so, than the Seahawks because of the pick that came with it. And if you look at Mel Kiper's mock draft today, it's a very interesting pick that he has the Seahawks making that they sure wouldn't have been in position for if the Broncos had had the kind of season that everybody thought they were going to have. And that's just one mock, and it's different from most of the others. I'll tell you what that is coming up here in about 10 minutes. But I am not convinced that Russell Wilson's toast. I'm convinced he can't sit back in the pocket and do what he wants to do to win MVP awards. I don't think those are ever going to come. I don't think Russell's ever going to win an MVP award, and I don't know whether he's ever going to get MVP votes.
I hope he knows that now.
I don't know whether he does. That's a good question. But I do believe that a Russell Wilson who gets back to doing what he was best at can absolutely still have success in the NFL.
But I do agree with Cowherd's one point there, that pretty much all of the greats had a chemistry with their team and a camaraderie with them that I don't know if Russ is going to have unless he did realize through this year that he finally needs to change.
And I wonder whether, and that's a good point, and I wonder whether or not it was okay here for a long time because of the uniqueness of some of the personalities around him. Are Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, et cetera, so unique? Cam Chancellor, are they so unique that it allowed Russell to be, I'll just use the word weird for lack of a better other term, And it still worked because those guys were so strong and had such magnetic leadership that it was able to overcome the fact that the quarterback was not a big-time leader for that group. Maybe. And the accountability from a Doug Baldwin. And maybe it was just a perfect storm that allowed Russ to just be the quarterback rather than be the everything that is asked of an NFL quarterback today. And maybe Russ is strong enough to handle some of that, but not all of it. That's also possible, and maybe that's even harder for him now with the loss of Trevor Moad, which I think really has hurt him over the course of the last 2 years. And I say that with great sympathy for Russ. I don't know. You're right. I don't know whether his leadership will ever be able to pull an NFL team to a Super Bowl. It might not. He might never win another one again. But I do think that he can get back to being a good, productive NFL player with the right coach and the right system and the right attitude adjustment and change. And I do think all of that stuff is possible if he gets it and if they bring the right person in. I don't think Sean Payton's that person. I thought Jim Harbaugh was that person. Looks like he's not going to go. I don't know what they end up with. They say they may name a head coach by the end of the day today. So I'm watching for that because I think it's fascinating. Ooh. The story is super interesting in Denver and just as it is here, by the way. I mean, you know, where the Seahawks go now with the fifth pick, the 20th pick, fascinating as well. And oh, by the way, the man who invented the mock draft has his first of the season out, and he's got the Seahawks making a big surprise pick at number 5. We'll tell you what that is and everything you need to know next.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, perhaps a preview of what's to come at the NFL Awards banquet, but the Seahawks are having a tough couple days. First, they were shut out of the rookie awards given out by the Pro Football Writers. Those went to the Jets, as both Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson won. The AP actually does the voting for the official honors, so we don't know exactly what those will be yet, but doesn't bode well for the chances of either Tariq Woolen or Ken Walker. Meanwhile, Pete Carroll, not on the list of finalists for Coach of the Year. Basically, every coach you can think of is on there, but not the guy who traded away his franchise quarterback and then found a way to still make the playoffs when everybody thought they would have the worst team in the league. Yeah, that certainly makes sense. Mel Kiper Jr. has his first mock draft of the season out, and in it, the Seahawks with the number 5 pick in the draft select Will Levis, quarterback, Kentucky. Wow. That's kind of a surprise. So he's obviously not buying into the idea that they're going to sign Geno Smith to a big long-term deal in this version of the draft. Carter, Stroud, Young, and Anderson are all gone, so the Seahawks wouldn't have a shot at any of those four. And by the way, that seems about right, right? That those four will be gone. I just think that most folks think that if the Seahawks get in that spot, they either trade away the pick or draft somebody more like Tyree Wilson out of A&M or out of Texas Tech. But kind of interesting. Will Levis, the guy who, let's see. He puts mayonnaise in his coffee.
Will Levis, quarterback at the University of Kentucky, and I have been known to put mayonnaise in my coffee sometimes.
Yeah, that seems like a guy you want for your next quarterback. I'm actually kind of into the idea. I like the mayonnaise more than the coffee. In the same mock, the 20th pick would go to Byron Young, who's a defensive end linebacker, edge guy out of Tennessee, some sort of like Daryl Taylor, quite frankly.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, only one Hall of Famer this year in baseball, and his name is Scott Rolen. He played in Philly and St. Louis, third baseman, of course. Is he deserving? Yeah. The numbers are certainly Hall of Fame worthy. His defense was spectacular. He won, what, 8 gold gloves over the course of his career. Maybe I'm a little biased because he was always a National Leaguer the whole time, but it's never really struck me as a Hall of Famer when he was playing. No issues with him going in, but I'm just kind of more of a small hall guy. Like, I don't need good players to be in the Hall of Fame who are consistent for a long period of time. I want the very best. I probably wouldn't have voted for him, but I'm certainly not going to sit here and complain about the fact that he's in the Hall of Fame. Good for him, and he seems like a nice guy. Todd Helton just missed getting in. I would think he gets in next year, and Billy Wagner has a shot next year or the year after as well. Meanwhile, a day after finding out Aaron Goldsmith would be staying in Seattle, he joined Wyman and Bob yesterday and explained why.
If I pursued that job further, it would be for all the wrong reasons. It would be for money, and it would be for greed, or it would be for fame and for money. And those are horrible, horrible reasons to take a job, especially when we have everything we need here. We have a home here. We love it here. Our children love it here. And most importantly, I get extreme professional satisfaction from doing what I do for the Mariners. And I've become so attached to the community and to the team. And this is home. It's that simple. This is my home.
A thoughtful and emotional Aaron Goldsmith yesterday on with those guys. I listened to that whole interview, and it was great. It was nice to hear just how important the city and the region have become to Aaron and his family during his time here. And I think that feeling is pretty mutual, as he's very well liked, as he should be. I like one of the cool things I thought he said yesterday is that in his profession, more so than mine, although they are, you know, cousins, you need to be liked, right? You're essentially, that's the gig. Tell people about baseball while being likable. And the fact that so many people liked him, I'm sure, is incredibly satisfying in terms of how well he feels like he's doing his job. I wouldn't know what that's like because nobody likes me, but I'm sure it feels really good for somebody like Aaron.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, big opportunity now for the Kraken to make some hay as they get 3 games in 4 days at home against beatable teams. Starts with Vancouver tonight. Canucks just made a coaching change. They struggled under Bruce Boudreau, who they just hired last year, went on a little run when he was first hired. So that's one you really want to win. Calgary here on Friday. Justin and Maura and Betsy and I are all going to be there Friday night cheering on the Kraken as they hopefully go for their second straight win. Circle that one as well, because the Flames are just 4 points behind Seattle in the standings. And then Columbus will be in over the weekend. They are in last place. So, yeah, chance to pick up some points here. Looking forward to seeing who's healthy tonight. Both Andre Burakovsky and Jaden Schwartz were both absent the last couple games. The team, though, sent winger John Hayden back to Coachella, which is odd because I thought he played a really good game the other night. So I guess the expectation is at least one, if not both of those guys are ready to return. We'll see tonight or perhaps even this morning at morning skate. There you go. That's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk show. You see Jeff Baker's article yesterday on Kraken ratings?
Actually, I read it this morning. Interesting.
But not good. Yeah. I mean, they're doing below a one share regularly on Root Sports. I mean, that's a huge bummer. And you know, there's a lot of, I'm sure, speculation as to why that is. And Jeff goes into a lot of it in his article. It's worth a read at the Seattle Times if you have a few minutes, if you're interested in hockey. I think there's a bunch of things. Some of it is the availability of Root, and he points out that of all the markets in the NHL, Seattle has essentially the most cord cutters who get their television through broadband, a streaming service or broadband in some way, and Fubo's the only one of those that carries Root Sports. So that's going to necessarily hurt their ratings, right? Pittsburgh, this may or may not be a coincidence, and I'm just reading from Jeff's article here. Pittsburgh has the lowest percentage of cord cutters and the highest ratings in the league. That's probably not a coincidence. Now, Pittsburgh does well anyway. It's a popular sport in that town, and it's a huge sports town. But, you know, and that's after decades of Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin and Jagr and everybody else that's been in Pittsburgh since the 90s. Yeah, obviously it's been, a hockey powerhouse. But, you know, you don't want to ignore the effect of the cord cutting and the way Nielsen is looking at it.
He's also right. Like, you overlap the success of the Seahawks and the Mariners. Kind of,
I'm sure that hurts as well. But
the sales.
My fear is, look, hockey, there's a little bit of a barrier of entry to hockey, right? There's a little barrier. You got to watch it. You got to understand it. You got to learn it. It's not quite as simple and slow. And I say this without meaning to insult soccer. Soccer is a lot easier to understand. You may not get the finer points, but the very basics of watching them go up and down the field is fairly understandable, right? Because the game does not move quite as quickly and flow quite as freely as hockey does. And there's not as many little intricacies to the rules, not to the game, but to the rules.
Yeah.
Why are they dropping the puck? Why are they doing a faceoff? Why, you know, for a lot of people, watching hockey is like watching rugby. Why are they doing a scrum? Why are they doing that weird out of bounds thing where they lift the guy up in the air? I get it. I grew up with it. It's not like that to me, but I think that for a lot of people it is. And when the team came out and people didn't understand the game right away, and the team was bad, and they had some issues with, you know, going away for the pandemic, well, you put all those things together, and I'm sure a lot of those people never bothered to come back. So they've got some work to do, and I think it starts with teaching people the game. That's always been, I think, the biggest thing the Kraken need to do. They've hired the right broadcasters. They've put together an excellent group on Root Sports. Oh, yeah. But you got to find a way to teach the game, and they're probably going to have to advertise that that's where they are. Hey, come find us at Root Sports. Because I don't know whether everybody thinks to do that and thinks about when the games are on. I'm thinking an advertising budget for them may be awfully important at some point moving forward. All right. Yesterday, we asked Tim Hasselbeck a crucial question about the biggest decision on the Seahawks plate this offseason. And his answer, different than I thought it would be. Stick around. You'll hear it next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
Brock said, tell me more about Tyree Wilson coming up here in 15 minutes. I want to hear why he's going to make a good Seahawk, because a whole bunch of those mock drafts sure seem to be pointing in his direction. Before we do it, though, our friend Tim Hasselbeck joining us right now. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm great. How are you guys?
Well, I got a question right off the gate. Salk's been saying this, you know, so I thought I'd bring it right to your attention because we're friends, Tim. Do you have now a Southern accent? Have you changed and you moved to Nashville? Do you got a little, Southern twang to you now that you moved down there to Nashville?
I don't know what y'all talking about.
You're like not even recognizable anymore. Like now you're pronouncing all your R's and I hear the Southern twang. And we don't even really know you anymore, Tim.
I've always pronounced my R's. I think one thing my parents decided when my dad got drafted by the Patriots, he was like, listen, like I'll retire before you guys start sounding like the people here. I mean, it's just, let's be honest. Unbearable.
Unbearable, he says. That's pretty good. Hey, let's talk some Seahawks because you were so on this last year in terms of what their offseason would look like, and now they're back in another kind of interesting spot. What did you learn about them this year? What did you learn about Pete and John and the Seahawks organization over the course of the last year?
Well, I think that thing I learned about them is they seem to be unafraid of, you know, what maybe the outside perception is. And the reason I say that is, you know, in terms of what everyone thought of Russ, you know, they maybe had different feelings and maybe some of them were personal and maybe some of them were performance, but whatever it was, they had their own belief about how things would go with him. And so they move on. And I think generally speaking, everyone, not everyone, but most people thought that it would be a good thing for Denver, and it ultimately was not. And then I think in terms of their own evaluation, look, they had an evaluation of Geno Smith that they felt, you know, a certain way about. They obviously had the benefit of seeing him play, you know, a little bit that that season, you know, going into last offseason. And then as everybody screamed for Baker Mayfield and as everybody, you know, talked about other players, they were, you know, they were patient and they, you know, felt a certain way about Drew Lock, but they also weren't going to hand him anything. So I think you have to give them a massive amount of credit for how they've evaluated the quarterback position because so many people get it dead wrong. And I think they look pretty smart based on how it went this year.
Well, we'll get to that, Geno, in that QB conversation. I hear you say they have an authenticity and a conviction that maybe others don't. And I'm just kind of curious, just off the cuff, obviously. I didn't give you this question ahead of time, like you get on SportsCenter. But of 32 organizations around the league, Tim, how many have that kind of conviction? How many have that ability to, in that authenticity and communication, whatever way you want to frame it, to be able to say, yeah, here's all the outside. Here's the perception everybody else has. But, you know, we got the courage of our conviction to do this and do it the way we want to do it. How many organizations have that?
Yeah, I think less than 10 is what I would say. And maybe that number is smaller, slightly bigger. Like Kansas City, to me, I think they have that conviction. I think there are teams like that. Now, some teams have the conviction to get it wrong. Like New England has had that conviction. I think they got it wrong this past year. I'll say I live in Nashville. They, you know, they fired their GM in the middle of the year after extending his contract till 2027. Like they weren't on the same page. And so I think clearly there's good communication and trust between John Snyder and Pete Carroll, you know, in terms of the direction and vision for the organization. So I think when you look at that, I don't think there are a ton of them that have that.
The last four standing, by the way, do. I mean, San Francisco's gone with Mr. Irrelevant. Philadelphia went with Jalen Hurts. Cincinnati, you know, goes about their business a little bit differently with a little bit more of a budget. And you mentioned Kansas City, so probably no surprise that the four left standing all share that similar trait as well.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. They most definitely do. I mean, you think about how, like, Howie Roseman has gone, you know, kind of all in on things. You think about how, you know, the situation in San Francisco when Kyle Shanahan hired John Lynch, it was like, wait, what? Like, you know, he came out of TV to do that. But there's clearly trust and a vision and seeing things in a similar fashion. I think that's critical. And look, for all the things that you maybe are unhappy about in Seattle with how various things have gone, I think clearly the relationship between John Snyder and Pete Carroll, you know, as you relate it to the rest of the league in terms of general manager and head coach, it's one of the better pairings.
So, Tim, what do you do now with Geno Smith? He's a free agent, as is Drew Lock. So right now, the Seahawks essentially won't have a quarterback room heading into this offseason. What do you do?
Yeah, I think that what you do is you're patient with this. I think you know, and you guys would have a better sense of this than I would. Obviously, Geno said all the right things. He played well this season. Here's what I can tell you, you don't want to do. You don't want to pay Geno Smith money that you don't have to pay him. You also don't want to offend Geno Smith so much that he just goes somewhere else just because he's offended. And so what I mean about that is this, like, if you think back to Ryan Fitzpatrick a few years ago, he had this amazing year with the Jets, and then he was a free agent, but there was really not a landing spot for him. And so while all these quarterbacks were getting long-term deals and guys are resetting the quarterback market, and, you know, the money just was skyrocketing at the quarterback position, what the Jets did was they were like, hold on a second. Like, before we do that, you know what? Go ahead and test the market. Go test the market. See what's out there. Now, ultimately, what happened was the Jets ended up signing Fitz to like a one-year, $12 million deal, which was wildly below starting quarterback money, but they also didn't bid against themselves. And so they got their guy. He was making more money than he would make elsewhere, but they also didn't, you know, they didn't, you know, anchor themselves to a quarterback for the long term that they didn't need to. So I'm not saying you're going to get Geno on a one-year, $12 million deal. I do think there's like this another level, this second tier of quarterbacking, which is should be second tier quarterbacking money, that if I were Seattle, I would try to figure out, all right, like, is there somebody else I like better that's in that level? And what would he cost? And before I start bidding against myself on one guy, let me evaluate that.
So let's say second tier. I tend to agree with that. Right now, second tier money is in the $30 million a year range, right? Because it's not in the $40 to $50 million that some of those other guys are getting. But if we truly think he's second tier, that's $30-plus million a year. Are you willing to pay that to Geno Smith, or do you think you can do just as well paying a third of that to somebody else like Drew Lock, using your system that you had last year that you feel like helped turn Geno Smith into the player he was, and spending the other $20-plus million on defensive line help, offensive line, whatever the case may be?
Yeah. So here's what I would tell you. And it, you know, it's not a cop-out answer, but you know, cause sometimes we talk about these things like, all right, this guy's making 50 a year, and then this guy's making 30 a year. The question is, when can I get out? Like, so if you're going to pay Geno 30, you know, if for the 2023 season, that's fine. What'd you have to guarantee him? Did you have to guarantee him? Did you sign him to a 4-year, you know, $100 million contract where, you know, he's guaranteed 60? And so for all intents and purposes, he's your starter for the next 2 years. And you know, you're on the hook for 60 over two. Like, I probably am not doing that. Just being real, like, I'm probably not, but like, you know, I don't know that I could not get convinced of maybe doing that. so like, that to me is the bigger issue. I actually posed that exact question. I was sitting with Herm Edwards, watching the games this weekend. And that's exactly what I said to him. I was like, look, is that what you're doing? Like, would you like 30 a year? Cause when you hear 30 a year, everyone's like, whoa, 30 a year. And you're like, well, listen, dude, that's almost half of starting quarterback money. Yep. So, or, you know, elite starting quarterback money. So you're not technically overpaying. Look, the Tennessee Titans are going to pay more than that for Ryan Tannehill. And he's at the end of a deal, or towards the end of a deal that he, you know, an extension that he signed. So like, I just, to me, it ends up being the out. Like, do I think he's going to play better than he played this last season? Or do I think I'm going to get that exact thing? And maybe I'm not sure if I'm going to get the year out of it. That's what it boils down to for me.
He is the QB whisperer. He is from Nashville. He is Timmy Hasselbeck. Here's maybe one of my last questions I'll throw your way, Tim. And it's fascinating. And Salk and I, I'm sure, going to talk a lot about this probably every week until there's a little bit of resolution. Last season, what they did with Geno Smith, going into the year, nobody saw it coming. Nobody. You may have seen the Russell Wilson move coming. You would have never bet 4,500 yards, 30 touchdowns, 100 QB rating, Pro Bowler, everything else. Nobody would have. So does that put wind in their sails to say, you know what, if we could do it with Geno, we can do it with Drew Lock. He's equally athletic. In some ways, he has a stronger arm. He does not have the anticipation and the accuracy in the eyes that Geno has by any accounts. And Geno did it, bird in hand. But if we did it one time around with Geno, can we do it now with Drew Lock? What would you say to that?
Yeah, I would say that all those measurables and stuff are great, and you can trust your coaching all you want. But I saw a maturity in Geno Smith that you see out of really good quarterbacks, right? Like how he answered questions, how when things weren't going great, how he handled it, how he didn't assume success was going to happen. Like I thought you saw a maturity out of him that you want to see, that honestly, like you don't see, or you haven't seen previously out of Drew Lock, at least publicly, that you haven't seen out of somebody like Kyler Murray, that you haven't seen out of Zach Wilson. And I think that is really important. Look at the maturity you see out of Jalen Hurts. Like, you know, Brock, you know this. Like, you know, that position and how it relates to the entire football team and how some guys that were super talented and just kind of whatever, just didn't have it. You know, I think that there's like a mental toughness and discipline that you need to have. I think you saw it out of Geno. I don't think you can say like, oh, hey, we did it with him. We do it with that. Like, we do it with Drew Lock. But here's what I would say, and I think this kind of circles back to the last question. If you're saying, hey, do you need a quarterback for next season? All right, so here's what you have. Quarterback tier two. Of the guys that we're probably choosing between, Jimmy Garoppolo, Derek Carr, Geno Smith, like tier two guys, right? So that's where we are. And maybe some other guys that are in the mix, like where's Zach Wilson? Where's Baker Mayfield? Where, you know, maybe some of these other guys. Who am I paying the most? I'm committing the most in terms of what I feel comfortable doing, not what somebody else offers one of those guys. I'm sticking with Geno Smith.
Can you win a Super Bowl paying Geno Smith $30 million a year?
Yes, I think you can. But I think that, you know, if you look at, yes, to answer your question, yes, because I think if Geno Smith can play, you know, like a composite, like how he played for the vast majority of the season, if you get that kind of play in the postseason, that's good enough to win a Super Bowl.
That's huge. I mean, that's a really important, I mean, of everything you said, that's probably the one that will stick with me the most, because that's ultimately the question you've got to ask yourself, right? This whole idea of what's a fair price, what's the fair mark. I mean, that's all well and good, but if you're John Schneider, the first question you got to ask yourself is, if I pay this guy this amount of money, can we win a Super Bowl with him? So I love it. I'm glad to hear you say that. That is interesting. I haven't necessarily heard other folks say that. Mm-hmm. So I'll take Tim.
And he didn't even say the Southern twins.
No,
either.
There's twins. A little Southern. Don't you hear a little bit?
No, I don't really. No.
Really?
No. You know what? He just, Salk's ever been, he's been a hater ever since I outed him that his high school, you know, would have tea with the other team after the game.
You can't keep talking about BBN. Now that BBN has become a powerhouse, now that they've got guys at Michigan going to the NFL next year, now that the Seahawks offensive coordinator was the coordinator of BBN, I don't want to hear any more BBN slander. The Knights are here to stay, Tim.
Brock, here's all you have to understand. He's like BBN, like, you know, as if it's, you know, UFC, you know, and really it's like Buckingham Browns and Nichols. And by the way, just so everybody, hey,
you know the names,
I was like West Coasters. Okay. So like, just so everybody's clear, like they play their games in Cambridge, right by Harvard. Like that's where they play. Okay. So like, you know, let's, you know, pump the brakes here a little bit, you know?
Thank you, Timmy.
Thanks, Tim. Miss you, man. Good to hear your voice. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, buddy. There you go. Yeah, mostly appreciate it. Tim comes on, crushes me.
Noted hater, Mike Salk.
Yeah, well, noted hater Tim Hasselbeck throwing shade at my high school, for God's sakes. I mean, it is in Cambridge.
Just because you put on a pretentious accent when you say it doesn't change the geography of where it is.
We all know you're elitist. It's not that surprising.
Well, that's certainly up for debate. I mean, we like to say that. I don't know if it's actually true.
Who's here to debate?
Everybody likes to call me elitist, but then Brock, meanwhile, was like, oh, I passed on a $950,000 home. Oh, don't we all hate how that happened? Like,
man of the people.
But I'm the elitist. Brock's the man of the people. I see how it is. That's
filling
fine.
It with thousands of dollars of furniture.
I like how Tim, though, like, you can change anything just by putting on that accent, right? You're just like, well, of course, they play their games in Cambridge. Like, all right. Like, you could say that about anything. What did the guy say yesterday? He was making fun of Buckley. Like, well, they play their games in Buckley. Like, you
doesn't,
can,
no, that doesn't
you
work
can
the
say
same
that
way.
With anything.
That doesn't work.
Yes, it does.
You can say Wallingford. You
can't say Cambridge Buckley. Sounds fancier.
Cambridge sounds fancier? You should go to East Cambridge. I don't think you'll think that at all. Hang out by Central Square and be like, yeah, this doesn't seem so fancy. Not even a little bit. All right. We're going to talk through that whole idea of whether or not you can win a Super Bowl with Geno Smith and paying him money. We'll do that coming up here in about 15 minutes once Brock joins us. I want to spend a few minutes beforehand talking through some baseball stuff. As I said, there were a lot of baseball guests on the station yesterday, a lot of really interesting points of view. And I thought I'd run through a few of the things we heard. And I'll start with Shannon Dreyer, who joined us yesterday. And she and Ryan Divish both had a similar idea that, yeah, there's probably not going to be any more trades at this point for the Mariners.
It is getting kind of late for trades. I think a lot of people will look back at the Jesse Winker and Eugenio Suarez trade that we saw last year. But you have to remember, you were coming out of a lockout when that happened. Even though it was so late, everything was pushed. Those kinds of trades are you don't usually see. Now, what you could see going into spring training, it is kind of curious to still see the amount of starting pitching that they have with this group. There's nothing wrong with that because I think it's been proven you can never have too much. But I think there is a full expectation that you would see your sixth starter, seventh guy traded.
Yeah, and the fact that they, seven, right? Throw seven on there because by all accounts, we may be ready to see Bryce Miller, if not straight out of spring training, soon afterwards. And legitimately, if they wanted to, Matt Brash could be a starter for this. I mean, they've got ridiculous starting pitching depth right now. So when you look at a team that has as many starters that you believe are major league level or above, and an offense that still appears to be lacking, I mean, it's hard not to put together those pieces and see that a possible trade would still potentially benefit the Mariners. Now, I don't want to see them take less value for the guys they have. I don't want to see anybody given away. But, you know, it's hard not to put those two pieces together. Ryan Divish on yesterday with, I think, Bump and Stacy, with the idea that, yeah, there's another little extra problem with the trade market this year.
One thing that really is throwing a wrench into this is the World Baseball Classic. I think there's a lot of teams out there really, really afraid that somebody's going to get hurt or somebody's going to have something happen, whether it's a pitcher or a position player. So you may see some movement during spring training. Like, I think that's been something that teams have done too. They address the needs when they get there.
Hey, you know what would be nice is if you had a big surplus full of pitchers and a pitcher goes down somewhere around the league, somebody gets desperate after the WBC and is like, hey, yeah, I'll overpay for Chris Flexen. I'll overpay for Marco Gonzalez. Oh, he's a proven starter, started multiple opening days for your franchise.
Yeah,
no, I'll take a lefty like that. What do I need to give you? Oh, a significant bat? All right, I need a pitcher. Yeah, I think that that's a reasonable possibility as well. So, yeah, Mariners putting themselves, I think, in an okay position. And Ryan's right, the WBC will play a role here. Now, here's something that I told you yesterday, that on the list of people I'm most excited to see down in spring training, Ty France is going to be on my list because of kind of what happened last year. Unbelievable first two-thirds of the year, comes back, gets hurt, comes back. And he just was not the same in the final third and into the playoffs. And by all accounts, he's healthy. So what are we going to get from Ty France this year?
He got out of his approach. He started swinging at pitches out of the zone. And that's kind of what got him into the funk. But I think, you know, if you get that guy that's a 295 guy, 295 batting average, 370 on base and a 500 slugging, then that's just critical for them. And I mean, it's a huge year for him financially as well. And second year, this is his first year of arbitration eligibility, and he's a guy that you want to keep around a little bit longer. He's got to show them that he's more of that consistent hitter.
It is amazing how quickly people have sort of backed off the future for Ty France. And that's why I keep hoping that he was hurt. I don't mean hurt. I mean, obviously he was able to go out there and play, but not right.
Bothered.
And I'm going to continue to believe that that wrist was bothering him. Great word, Justin. Bothering him enough last year that, yeah, he could go out and do everything, but it wasn't the way it was supposed to be. I'm going to assume that was the case. And if so, you're going to get a regular, normal Ty France this year who should bounce back and just be fantastic.
Yeah, we had that conversation with KJ about who's got more left in the tank. Or more, I feel like Ty's got it still quite a bit. That is
one other thing I wanted to get to quickly here before Brock joins us. And Aaron Goldsmith dropped this yesterday. And as I read it or saw it, heard it, it dawns on me that he's absolutely right. When you think through what the Mariners did this offseason, maybe they didn't add all of the power, all of the hitting, all of the offense that you wanted them to. I agree with that. But one thing they did do is they brought in a group of players that do all have one thing in common.
Well, I think they certainly address some needs in a variety of ways, which I think people know what those are. I don't know if I need to roll call everything. For me, when I look at what needed to be done and the personnel that was filled, the thing that I like the most is the fact that you have guys who have been brought into the fold that have not just playoff experience, but a couple of guys with some fairly significant playoff experience, which it's great that we can be talking about how necessary that is and how realistic of a covetable asset that is for this organization.
Colton Wong has played in World Series. AJ Pollock has played in World Series. Teoscar Hernandez has been in the playoffs. I mean, the guys that they brought in, Tommy, listen, the guys they brought in have played in significant, four significant teams in big spots in the postseason. Probably not an accident, right? Probably, I mean, not every single one of them. They brought in a couple other guys, but
right. Well, last year it was just Carlos Santana.
Right. I mean, they just didn't have anybody on their team last year who had that playoff experience. Obviously, everybody who was here last year got a little bit of it, but the folks that they brought in, yeah, they're going to add to that, and I'm sure that's part of the appeal and part of the plan for where they're looking to go. All right, good stuff yesterday on the station. That's a very quick trip around the station, at least baseball-wise. We heard Tim Hasselbeck say a few minutes ago that, yes, you can win a Super Bowl while paying Geno Smith. How do you get that done? We'll discuss next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.